So the answer to the question of if you could please pass the filet mignon is actually usually no. And the reason for that is a pasuk in this week's parsha, a fascinating pasuk, really out of character for Sefer Bereishis. The parsha presents a quarrel between the Malach, Saro Shel Esav, and Yaakov Avinu, and they're having this fight, and through the fight, Vayar ki lo yacholo, Vayiga bikaf yerecho, and the Malach hit him, Vateka kaf yerech Yaakov, and the pasuk goes on further, after him hitting that area of the yerech, the leg, the pasuk says, Alkein lo yochel, I just want to find the lashon of the pasuk. Oh, here we go. Alkein lo yochel bnei Yisrael eskid anoshe asher al kaf hayerech ad yom zeh kinoga bekaf yerech Yaakov begid anoshe. The Torah says, from now on, from this week's parsha, Parshas Vayishlach, as a remembrance, as a commemoration to this struggle, to this quarrel, and where the Malach hit Yaakov Avinu, you will now not eat and be prohibited to eat as one of the machalos asurus, one of these items that we are not allowed to eat, that's non-kosher for us, the Gid HaNoshe. The Gid HaNoshe is actually known as the sciatic nerve. It's on the lower part of the animal and the body, going down from the thigh area towards the bottom, towards the foot. It's an interesting nerve that it's, I think, the longest and widest nerve that exists. And the filet mignon has the sciatic nerve within it. And what I'm told, I never tasted it, but what I'm told is that if you would take out the Gid HaNoshe, the sciatic nerve, outside of this piece of filet mignon, it removes the whole geschmack out of the piece. And it's not considered... The filet mignon apparently is a certain cut of the animal that is one of the best parts, the best steak possible. And what?
They don't serve in yeshiva.
Right, exactly. They don't serve in yeshiva for many reasons. Not only because it's not kosher, but for convenience. But apparently, there was a story, I think, that the OU was once called, that there was a yeshiva or an organization that was making a dinner, and the place was booked for two dinners that night. There was apparently an American Boy Scouts dinner that was also making a procession that night, and they wanted to figure out how to do it, and finally the Boy Scouts agreed to bring in a kosher chef and to kasher all the kalim, and it would be kosher and we would be able to run both these functions. However, the issue was they did not want to remove the Gid HaNoshe out of the filet mignon, and that was the issue which ultimately didn't allow them to proceed. So apparently it takes the geschmack out of this type of steak, and I don't really understand it, because at the end of the day, which we're going to get involved in, we'll see the halacha's approach to this Gid HaNoshe. We'll see that it doesn't really fit into what I'm presenting in reality, but supposedly that's what they claim, that it is. It tastes very, very good. If we look in delving into the nature of this prohibition and the nature of why the filet mignon and specifically the Gid HaNoshe, the sciatic nerve, is prohibited to eat. So in the first source, in the Gemara in Psachim, and Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara says as follows. This is the beginning of the second parak of Psachim, parak Kol Shah, which discusses a lot of the prohibited foods and permitted foods. And those are the sugyas in the beginning of the second parak. Meisiv Rav Yitzchok Nafcha. Vahare Gid HaNoshe. The Gid HaNoshe that in this week's parsha,
D'rachmona Omer.
Oh, I could have just looked here. Alkein lo yochul
bnei Yisrael asagid anoshe. That they should not eat. It is because of this that they shouldn't eat. Utznan. But the Gemara says, Sholeach adam yerech nechri v'ged anesha besocho. Mipneishin mekomo nikar.
What's the Gemara discussing?
The Gemara in the beginning of the second parak of Psachim is discussing a fundamental debate between Rabbi Avohu and Chizkiah. Very essential machlokas. When you have something that the Torah tells you not to eat, lo socha, do not eat it. Rabbi Avohu says, included in that lashon, included in that language of not being prohibited to eat, lo socha, is echad iser achila ved echad iser hanah b'mashma. Not only should you read the pasuk literally that you're only prohibited not to eat, you also cannot derive any positive benefit from such a food. Chizkiah says, absolutely not. Unless the Torah says, lo se'achel, unless the Torah says it in a different way, just because it told you not to eat does not mean that it's including deriving benefit and the Isser Hana'ah as well. So the Gemara is going back and forth to prove which opinion is correct. So the Gemara says, how can you say, Rabbi Avohu, that every time the Torah says, lo socha, don't eat, that includes within it deriving pleasure? But what are you going to do with our pasuk? In Parshas Vayishlach, in this week's Parsha, lo yochlu ged anoshe. And the Gemara says, a person has the ability to send to his neighbor, sholeach adam yerech nach lenachri, you can send the thigh, which includes within it the ged anoshe, mipnei shemekomo nikar. So what's Rabbi Avohu going to do with this? Apparently you are allowed to derive benefit. Now my guy is going to, the guy's neighbor is going to come to me, he's going to say thank you, he's going to be all friendly with you. This is pleasure, that you're giving him a present. Says the Gemara, you want to know the answer? Kosava Rabbi Avohu, kishehutra nevela, hi v'chelba v'gida hutra. The Torah says when it comes to nevela, nevela is non-kosher meat. Why is it that the nevela is not kosher? Because any animal that is not shechted properly or is shot dead without a shechita is considered nevela. That is classic non-kosher. It's a misnomer, but we call everything treif. Really, everything should really be called nevela. That's something which doesn't have a shechita. So the Torah, when it comes to nevela, although it says you can't eat nevela, the Torah says you are allowed to give it to your friend or to the ger. So the Gemara, so speaking about the ger tosha. So you're clearly allowed to derive benefit from the nevela because the Torah goes out of its way to tell you, omachra l'nachri, you can sell it to a guy. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Avohu says, when the Torah went out of its way, kishahutra nevela, he v'chelba v'gida hutra, wasn't only talking about the flesh, but it also was talking about the chelav, the fat, the gida, and also the nerves, also the gid. So therefore, says Rabbi Avohu, that's the reason, you're right. In general, my principle is right if it says lo yochol, unless the Torah explicitly says so, and since the Torah already explicitly said so in Nevela, so I can apply it to Gid Anasha as well, and that's why a person can send his Gid Anasha to his neighbor. Says the Gemara qualifies. Honi chalamanda amr yesh beginim anosein tam. I can understand such a cheshbon, such a mahalach, such an analysis, if you understand that Gidim and the Gid Hanasha has taste. Elamanda Amr ain begidim no sein tam. And I'll sell you even further that this Manda Amr, the Gemara in Chulin calls Gid Hanasha, eats ba'alma. It's like a piece of wood and it has no taste, which I don't know how. You could have this filet mignon with a piece of wood inside. Whatever it is, it is. But that is a debate in the Gemara if this thing has taste. So what are you going to say? That's considered nevela meat? Come on. If you understand that it's a filet mignon, it gives it a geschmack like the Boy Scouts. All right, that I can hear. This is similar to nevela. And when the Torah told you that the nevela meat that wasn't shechted is permitted to be sold to your geisha neighbor, it was including within it the Gid Anoshe as well. But if you're telling me that this thing tastes horrible, tastes like a piece of wood, That was what the Torah meant when it told you can sell the nevela? It was talking about the meat. It was talking about what has taste. It wasn't talking about the ginanasha. Ma'ika l'meimar. So says the Gemara, you're right. Man shamas le da'amar ein begidim no sein tam. Who is the one who tells us that the ginanasha tastes like a piece of wood? There's no tam, there's no taste. Rabbi Shimon. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And remember that that's Rabbi Shimon. We're going to get back to this. Disanya ha'ochol ginanasha shel behema tmeya. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev shdayim. Rabbi Shimon polter. Rabbi Shimon says no. You're totally exempt if you eat a ginanasha from a non kosher animal. You are exempt. Rabbi Shimon hachanami da'aser ba'na. So you're right. Rabbi Shimon, who is of the opinion that a ginanasha, the sciatic nerve, does not attain any taste. So then you're right. When the Torah spoke about nevela, it obviously was only speaking about tasty items. And specifically tasty items like the meat of the nevela. That's what the Torah told you was permitted. However, if I look at the ginanasha as a separate entity, because it doesn't have taste. So the Torah told me in this week's parsha, don't eat ginanasha. And now I go back to my regular rules of regulations of Rabbi Avoh, that any time the Torah said, don't eat, lo yochal, that included within it, not to eat, as well as not to derive benefit. That is what the Gemara tells us in Psach. So if a person concludes from this Gemara, if I would tell you that we paskin, that ein begidim benosein tam, that the ginanasha is not considered something that's full of taste, what is this debate about? What is this machlokas? It does taste, it not taste. So the Rashba in Chulin and Daftzadi Beis says, why don't we just ask a goy to taste it? Like, you know, what's this machlokas in Metzias? Just ask a goy to go to. So the Rashba qualifies and says, obviously everyone is of the opinion that there is somewhat of a taste here. The question is that level of taste that exists, that is the debate in the Gemara, is that sufficient to be considered enough tam and enough taste to prohibit other things? What do I mean by prohibiting other things? Let's say I have a ginanasha, I have a filet mignon, and I'm playing with the filet mignon, and I take out the ginanasha, and it drops into my bowl of chicken soup. Okay? So now, will that prohibit and make me throw out all of my chicken soup? If obviously there's not enough to counter the ginanasha. So that is what the Gemara in Chulin goes back and forth with these two manda amrim, yesh begidim b'no sein tam, or ein begidim b'no sein tam. If this thing actually has taste, so it now inputs into the chicken soup, bad taste, so now you got to throw out the chicken soup. If it's just a piece of wood, so it's like a piece of wood fell in my chicken soup, your guest might not come back, but it doesn't prohibit the chicken soup, and the chicken soup is permitted to eat, and that is not no sein tam, so therefore it doesn't damage the chicken soup. So that is the debate in the Gemara. Fine. The problem is as follows. The Rambam, when we look for how we paskin, and how do we come out, halacha l'maisa, shulchan aruch, so we need to first look at the Rambam. The Rambam is of the opinion that ein begidin b'no sein tam. The ginanasha on its own, the sciatic nerve alone, does not necessarily have taste, and therefore it doesn't input and cause problems if it falls into your chicken soup. So on that end, it's a good thing. However, the problem is as follows. If you look in source number 4, the second Rambam brought down in Parakhes, the Rambam says, Gid hanoshe mutter bahana. Lefichach mutter la'adam l'shloach la'akam yerach shegid hanoshe besocho. The Rambam says that a ginanasha, the sciatic nerve, if you have a piece of filet mignon and you take out the gid, whatever it is, and you want to give it to your neighbor because you can't eat it, not a problem. Give it to your neighbor. Now that's problematic. Why is that problematic? Because again, let's think about it. The Rambam, as you look in the next halacha, in halacha tesvav, the Rambam says, "Kol makom shenemer b'Torah lo socha lo sochlu lo yochlu, echad iser achila v'echad iser anoshe v'echad iser anah b'mashva." The Rambam says, "What is my rule in general when the Torah says, do not eat something?' Included in that pasuk is not to eat and not to derive benefit. Until the Torah goes out of its way to tell you that this thing is permitted. But if it doesn't go out of its way, then that's prohibited. So now let's count 1 + 1. The Rambam sounds like he's paskening like Rabbi Avo in the beginning of source number 1 in Psachim. That means when the Torah says don't eat, then don't eat and don't derive pleasure included in don't eat. Unless the Torah tells you otherwise. Now, how does the Rambam paskin when it comes to Gidanasha? Does it have taste? Does it not have taste? The Rambam tells us that Gidim do not have taste. They don't mess up your chicken soup. So then we have a problem. Because if you look at the Rambam that we read in the second Rambam, the Rambam contradicts the Gemara. The Rambam tells you that Gidanasha, the sciatic nerve, is mutter bahana. You are allowed to derive pleasure. But why is that so? The Gemara in Pesachim told us, what does Rabbi Avo do with the brisa that says you can send to your neighbor the Gidanasha, the sciatic nerve? He tells us that it's included in the Pasuk of Nevela. Just like the Torah told you the Nevela could be sent, so to the Gid and the Chelev. And the Gemara qualified, the Gemara says, I can hear such an argument if the Gid has taste. And it's similar to the Basar, to the meat of the Nevela. But if it's not similar at all, it's not parallel, it doesn't even have any taste, so then we're back to square one. Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah said don't eat, and included within that is don't derive pleasure. Yet the Rambam tells you that it's permitted. You are allowed to derive pleasure. That is question number one on the Rambam. Question number two, not on the source sheets, you'll have to take my word for it. You look earlier in Perek Dalin, Macholos Asuris, Halacha Yud Ches, the Rambam is discussing other parts of a non-kosher animal, of an nevela or a trefa, different types of non-kosher animals, that we're not necessarily focusing on the meat. Let's say you want to talk about eating the nails. You want to talk about eating the bones. You want to talk about eating the skin. Is that also prohibited in all these isurim that the Torah says, don't eat a nevela, don't eat a trefa? The Rambam says, absolutely not. Even though it's pater avalasar, why? Because these things are not edible. One of the things listed in the Rambam is gidim, is the nerves. So why is it that in general, the Gemara Rambam tells me that gidim are not included in prohibitions, in treif meat. However, when it comes to gidanasha, that's not the case. So you'll tell me very simply, that's the story in Parshas Vayishlach. The exception to the rule is Gidanasha because of this story, because he hit him and we have a commemoration, it's the Yotzim and Aklal. Yeah, but it's not so simple. Because if you look at the Rambam, the beginning in source number 4, the Rambam tells you, Ha'ochel Gidanasha shel nevela, o shel trefa, o shel ola, chayiv shtayim. The Rambam says, it's not true. Not only are you obligated and prohibited from eating the Gidanasha, says the Rambam, you're also going to get a second set of malchus if that Gidanasha is a Gidanasha coming from an animal that wasn't shechted, which most of the time is going to be the case. If a person's eating a Gidanasha, he's probably not asking and making sure the guy has his machmir on his shechita. He's probably saying, to heck with it, and like throw it all out there. I'm going to go to McDonald's, I'll get the nevela, and I'll get the Gidanasha within it, and that's, let's get the real filet mignon. You know, well, this guy's not going to... So the Rambam tells you, even though in general the Rambam tells you gidim and nerves are not edible, however, he tells us over here you're going to get two malchus. How do you understand this? Doesn't make any sense. If it's not edible, so then, okay, you want to tell me there's an exception to the rule when it comes to nevela, when it comes to Gidanasha, because there's a story. But when it comes to nevela, when it comes to trefa, when it comes to ola, why should that be? And if you look at the Rambam and the halacha before that, the Rambam says, if it's the Gidanasha from a non-kosher species, from a non-kosher animal, then you're fine. Then Gidanasha doesn't apply. You don't even get malchus for the sciatic nerve. How do we work all this out? How does any of this make sense? That's question number two on the Rambam. And we're going to resolve all of this. Just to throw one other question. The Rambam tells us that the third thing in this big chiddush of the Rambam that seems to contradict the general rule when it comes to nerves says Gid Anosha is different. But not only is Gid Anosha different like we just asked, you're going to get Malkus for Nevela, you're going to get Malkus for Trefa, but you're also going to get Malkus if this animal was a carbon. You will get Malkus for eating Karbanos. You will get two sets of Malkus, not only for the Malkus of Gid Anosha, but also you will get lashes for eating a Karban Ola. You will be Chaya for that as well. However, the Rashba already asks that this seems to contradict source number three. A Gemara that says explicitly, let's just skip to the end of the Gemara, the last line, if you hold Ein Begidim Beno Sein Tam, which is the Rambam, that this does not impart taste, and therefore the chicken soup is totally fine, like we said before, the Mukdashim Isser Gid Ika Isser Mukdashim Lecha. If you have an animal that is hektish, and you eat from that animal the Gid Anosha, the Gemara tells you, if you are of the opinion that this Gid Anosha doesn't have taste, so then you're off the hook for the hektish. You just have to worry about the Gid Anosha, which the Torah said in this week's Parsha. And the Rambam, who's of the opinion that there is no taste when it comes to Gid Anosha, ignores this Gemara, says the Rashba, and paskins by Hektish, Chayv Shtayim. So the Rambam is just, question after question, what is going on over here? And again, the essential question, how does the Rambam explicitly go against the original Gemara in Psachim, which says that if you hold Ein Begidim Beno Sein Tam, you don't hold that there's no taste, you would have to hold that this is prohibited by Hanah or not. Just in terms of Halacha, if you're wondering whether or not a person, La Halacha, could get derived pleasure from the Gid Anosha, so it's interesting. In the tour, and in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that it's mutter bahana, like the Rambam says. However, if you look at the Beis Yosef says one should try to be machmer and stringent about this halacha, because there are those opinions that hold that the sciatic nerve, the Gid Anosha, is prohibited bahana. So we should be machmer for those opinions. Who is of such an opinion? Says the Beis Yosef, look in the Zohar, in Parshas Vayishlach, this week's Parsha, and you'll see that he holds the Gid Anosha, the sciatic nerve, is prohibited in deriving pleasure in Hana as well. The Darkei Moshe, the Rama, he asks on the Beis Yosef, he says, listen, I don't want to cause any problems over here, but one second, let's take a step back. Who wrote the Zohar? Who wrote the Zohar? Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one in the Gemara who holds Aser B'Hana. So that's why Rabbi Shimon wrote in the Zohar, don't derive any pleasure from the Gid Anosha. However, if we don't hold the Rabbi Shimon, or if we paskin Mutter B'Hana, so then, the Darkei Moshe says, so then one doesn't have to follow the Zohar. It depends how you hold in the Bavli. It's not like it's a machlokas, the Bavli and the Zohar. It's just an interesting... So how do we answer all these questions? So there's a fascinating idea brought down by a few Gdolim, Achronim. There are three of them that I know of that came up with the same idea. Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz in his Sefer on Yoredeya Kresi Uplesi, the Shar HaMelech on his Sefer on the Rambam, as well as Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk, the Or Sameach, my favorite. They say as follows. Shar HaMelech says, in general, we have to realize is, there's a concept in halacha that's introduced, really focused on this halacha when it comes to the sciatic nerve. And it's called achshavei. What does the word achshavei mean? If you go around in Israel and you use the word lachshiv, to give importance to consider, ani machshiv otcha, I consider you as someone important. Ani choshev. I am thinking about you, and therefore I give you chashivus. That is the lashon of lahachshiv. Says the Shar HaMelech as follows. This is not for this shir, but in other areas of halacha, There's a rush in Psachim which discusses this when it comes to chametz. Even if something doesn't have any taste and it was burnt to a crisp, the rush says, if I now swallow this thing, although technically I should be exempt because there's a halacha of nevela she'ena ruya lager, if something is not fit for consumption, so that's not something I would be obligated about. If I eat that item, so I now gave it importance. Ani machshiv et zeh. I consider this as food. If I take Crest toothpaste, even though outside they'll say you're a meshugana, if I say, but I like it on my steak, so then I'm a meshugana, but I'm giving it chashivas. So that's one type of achshaveh. And Emir Tzashem, we could talk about that when it comes to Pesach. But the Shaar HaMelech says, there's another type of achshaveh, where you, as a person, me and you, are not giving chashivas to the item. But you know who's giving chashivas to the item? The Torah. The Torah said that this item, which has absolutely no taste, and is ein begidim and no same time, and is like a piece of wood that falls into your chicken soup, and technically and colloquially would say that tastes like garbage. The Torah says, through its prohibitions, we are now considering this as a piece of flesh, as macholos asuras. There's an achshavei not from the person, but an achshavei from the Torah. And when did the Torah say and make this consideration? When did the Torah say this chiddush? In our parsha in Sefer Bereishis. Unbelievable. Sefer Bereishis is stories. This is the parsha that the Torah says. You know what the Gidanoshe? It's not only prohibited. Alkein lo yochlues Gidanoshe. We perceive the Gid Hanoshe as macholos asuros. And that is something that is edible now in the eyes of the Torah, because it prohibited it. So it's exactly the fact that the Torah prohibited it that now caused the item to be considered food and meat. If that's the case, says the Shaar HaMelech, that's how the Rambam knew that the Gemara, that the Gid Hanoshe must be mutter bahana. It must be permitted. It's no different essentially from the basar, from the meat of the nevela, because the Torah gave it an achshaveh and consider it to be the basar hanevela, and memela, it's permitted bahana. Says the Or Sameach, that's the reason why a person, on the one hand, when it comes to a non-kosher animal, to a pig, to a camel, when he eats the Gid Hanoshe, he's off the hook. It's an eitz. Yeah, but when it comes to a nevela, not only do you get the Gid Hanoshe, you get twice. You want to know why? Because the Torah was machshivit. If the Torah was machshivit, you're going to get nevela, you're going to get trefa, and you're going to get Gid Hanoshe. Wherever the Gid Hanoshe stands, if it's a type of animal that the Torah says the Isser and the prohibition of Gid Hanoshe applies to, so then that's the type of animal that the Torah is saying, this is not a piece of wood. This is a piece of flesh. This is meat. Oh, this is meat? So now I can understand. I can get Malkus on Nevela. I can also be Chaya for Trefa. What about when it comes to Olav? No one seems to resolve this contradiction. The Gemara still tells you if you don't hold Gid Hanoshe is no same tam, so then you can't have Hekdish on it. It's still against the Gemara, the third source. How does the Rambam contradict the Gemara about Hekdish? Says the Or Sameach in his brilliance. Unbelievable. What did the Rambam say? The Rambam says, not all kachim. Look at the Rambam. Nevela, trefa, ola. Your Sameach says, you want to know something unique about ola? It's the one carbon that the Torah says, achila. Kalil tiye, you should burn this carbon. Lo sochlu, don't eat this carbon. Says the Or Sameach, the Rambam, according to this analysis, specifically designated and singled out the carbon ola from all other hekdesh and all other carbonos. And he wasn't contradicting the Gemara. Because when it comes to ola, there's an achshaveh. There's the Torah saying, kalil tiye lo sochlu. Achila, Hichshiv esagir anoshe to basar, and just like you're now going to be over nevela, you're going to be over trefa, you're going to be over one carbon, which is ola as well. And that's the brilliance that the Or Sameach resolves. But at the end of the day, it's a beautiful pshat, but it's against the Gemara. The Gemara in Pesachim told us, if you are of the opinion, like Reb Shimon, that gid hanoshe has no taste and it's eitz, then it's going to be aser bahana, like the regular rules of regulation of Rabbi Avo, that anytime the Torah says lo sochlu, and the Rambam paskins, that's including within it not to derive benefit. So we just gave a fancy analysis of this new concept called achshavei arachmana to basar, and very nice, but we need to work with the text. If the Rambam's against the Gemara, it's against the Gemara. We can't accept that. The Or Sameach says a fascinating idea. Who is the person that is of the opinion that ain begidim benosim tam? That the gid does not have taste, and therefore the Gemara in Pesachim in the first source says it's prohibited to derive pleasure to get hana. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, if you look in the Gemara in Makkos and elsewhere in Shas, has a unique opinion that even though in general we assume you need to eat a kezias in Oliveworth in order to be obligated and transgress prohibitions, Rabbi Shimon holds kol shehu l'malkus. You can eat a speck, anything, even a part, less than a kezias, and you're already going to get lashes. Tosos in Shuah says, just like Rabbi Shimon goes and makes his own rules when it comes to the size of the item, when it comes to the kezias, Rabbi Shimon similarly will say, if you eat something in an abnormal way, which an halacha is called shelo kederech, you put it in a piece of tin foil and then you swallow it, or you eat it, you make it burnt, and then you eat it. So although in general we would say a person eating in an abnormal fashion will obviously not get malchus, that's not the classical way of transgressing violations, Rabbi Shimon, just like he makes exceptions when it comes to the size, Rabbi Shimon also is of the opinion that one does not have the exemption of shelo kederech, and the fashion also is not a ptur, is not exemption. Says the Or Sameach, so you want to know the answer to our question? The Rambam's not against the Gemara in Pesachim. What was going on here? Again, what is our analysis? Our analysis is that the Torah, when it came to this halacha of gid anoshe, which technically on its own is not edible, is considered like a person swallowing toothpaste. This is not something that's considered a classical achila. The Torah was machshiv this to be edible, and therefore we could plug it into nevela, we could plug it into trefa, we could plug it into ola. There's a new concept called achshavei of the Torah. Rabbi Shimon will not hold of this concept of achshavei of the Torah. Because just like we just proved, says the Or Sameach, that Rabbi Shimon goes against the rules and regulations of the size, Rabbi Shimon also goes against the rules of regulations of the way a person eats something and how it tastes. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon never had to come on to a concept called achshavei to understand the concept and the way a person is obligated when it comes to gid anoshe. Because even though this thing is weird and it doesn't taste and this is the most abnormal eating process that I've ever seen, it doesn't matter when it comes to Rabbi Shimon. Because in his rule book, a person is obligated for less than a kezias, and a person is obligated for eating in an indirect, abnormal fashion. So obviously the Gemara said, according to Rabbi Shimon, that it's going to be prohibited in Hana. Because you don't need to consider this item to be basar, to be classical meat, to be edible food, in order to be obligated in the prohibition of gid anoshe, and therefore it's still going to be prohibited in benefit in hana, like the Gemara in Pesachim says. However, if a person does not accept the analysis in halacha of Rabbi Shimon, and we hold like the Rambam does that a person needs a full kezias, a person needs a normal eating process, a normal edible food when he eats it, so then obviously the way to understand the halacha in this week's parsha of Gid Anoshe is only if you consider that the Torah was machshiv and gave chashivus to this non-edible item and made a new parsha called Gid Anoshe that we can consider it to be meat. So then, if that's the case, it should follow the rules and regulations of regular meat that would be permitted in positive benefit, just like the Torah permitted nevela meat. So says the Or Sameach, the Gemara in Pesachim is also not a question on the Rambam, because that Gemara is specifically going according to Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon never had to come on to this idea and this chiddush of achshavei of the Torah, and obviously the Rambam didn't go with that, because the Rambam doesn't paskin like Rabbi Shimon all over, and therefore we just resolved all of the halachos that we presented. If you look in the last halacha, halacha tezayin, the Rambam says, Kol malchol shehu aser ba'ana, im nene v'lo achol, gon shemachar, o nosan la'akam o leklovim, ein oloke. What happens if you have a macholos asurus that is technically prohibited ba'ana? So then the Rambam says that you only get lashes on the eating part. You don't get lashes, even if you're talking about an item, let's say like basar v'cholov, that is prohibited in positive benefit. You won't get lashes on that. And the Rambam says that that's the case. Only achila, not hana. Explains the Magen Mishnah that the reason is because when the Torah said don't eat, so the regular way to be violate this prohibition is through eating. Now you're going to violate it through a back door, through deriving benefit. That's not the regular ikker way of violating and transgressing this violation. So therefore the malchus will not apply to that secondary iser, that indirect way. Explains the Prima Gadim when it comes to Gid Anoshe. Even if one is of the opinion that the sciatic nerve is prohibited b'hana, like Rabbi Shimon, he is of the opinion that this is the exception to the rule, and the hana will get lashes against the rules and regulations of the Rambam in general when it comes to prohibited foods. Why should that be? Explains the Prima Gadim, because over here, hana is not indirect. This thing is a piece of wood. So why is achila eating any better and more direct than deriving pleasure? Yeah, you're right. We just gave a whole shtickel Torah that the whole reason why you're able to be obligated when you eat it is because of a concept called achshavei, and the Torah was machshavei to be achila. But from today until tomorrow, you can tell me shtickel Torahs, but at the end of the day, this thing doesn't have taste. So there's no reason that the iser achila is primary and the iser hano would be secondary. So says the Prima Gadim, when it comes to Gid Anoshe, if a person is of the opinion that it's prohibited in deriving benefit, so then one could argue that here you would get malchus even by the hana, even by deriving benefit, because it's eitz. It's really technically not even an achila, so therefore it's not primary over the hana, and this would go out of the regular rules and regulations. So that is the analysis of the Rambam, this fascinating chiddush of the Torah when it comes to Gid Anoshe, that the Torah was machshiv to become an achila, and therefore it's like a nevela, becomes mutar ba'ana. That's why the Rambam says you're chayev for nevela twice, for treifa, for ola. That's what we explained, and then we explained how the Rambam fits into the Gemara. Just want to end, like we normally do, to understanding the depths and the machshava in the parsha we're discussing. Just to look at the psukim, the pasuk says, "Vayivaser Yaakov levado." Yaakov was left alone. "Vayiavek ish imo ad halos hashachar." Our school translates "Vayiavek ish imo." Strange language. "Vayiavek." A man wrestled with him until dawn. "Vayar ki lo yochlo, vayigab kef yarecho, vateka kaf yerech Yaakov, behev ko imo." And he hit Yaakov's ekev, his thigh, when he was behev ko imo, when he was wrestling with him.
This is not usually the language that's used when we're discussing fighting, quarreling, wrestling. We usually say riv, milchama, something classic. Why does he use this strange language as behayavko, vayavik? Vayomer shalcheni, and the malach says, let me go, ki Allah shachar, I have to go. Vayomer lo eshlachacha, ki berechtani, you have to give me a bracha. So the malach says, vayomer lo mashimcha, mashimecha, vayomer Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov yeomer od shimcha. Kim Yisrael, beautiful. We're going to change your name. We're going to call you Yisrael. Kisarise Elohim me'amanashim atucha. Vayishal Yaakov vayomer. Yaakov doesn't let him go. Vayomer agida no shimecha. Tell me what your name is. Vayomer lamazet yishal. And the malach has to go. He's in a rush. He's about to miss minyan upstairs. It's the last guy. Come on, let me go. I got to go. So Yaakov says, what's your name? I got to know your name. I have to write you. I have to put you in my phone book. And the Malach says, what? He's taking more time. He's going to miss minyan. The Malach says, why do you have to know my name? If you're anyways going to tell him that, you know, whatever the name is, like this, or make up a name, whatever it is. Why is he arguing? Why do you have to know my name? Now we're going to have a whole shtickle Torah and a whole conversation. You have to know my name? What do you have to know, man? Why are you asking me? What's the response? The malach goes away. The end. The quarrel. He found out his name. He asked him his name. He said, "I don't. Why do you want to know this? This and that." He left. Yaakov called this Piniel. Why? Ki ra'isi Elohim panim al panim v'tidnal tzel nafshi. I don't understand what's going on. A, I don't understand why the Torah is presenting this quarrel in this weird language. Behayavik, vayavik. That's not usually the language presenting a fight. Why is Yaakov obsessed in knowing this guy's name? He should be happy. You should say Agomel like we talked about last week. What is it? Just get out of that place. And the Malach knew his name. And the Malach doesn't answer him. Shmerel, whatever, it's my name, it's not important. You know? Why is he fighting back? You shouldn't know my name. What do you care about my name? Names, what's going on with this name business? And then, Yaakov Avinu's conclusion, what does he learn from this whole thing? How does he commemorate the place? Piniel. Piniel, because I saw Panim al Panim. If you would ask me, when we're building the monument of the historical location of the fight, I would put a tank like they have in Eretz Yisrael. I would put a soldier with a gun, an M16 or something. Or you're going to talk about I say you're getting all religious on me over here. What's the point? I think the analysis is as follows, and it fits in exactly with what we're speaking about. Yaakov and Saro Shel Esav over here was not only fighting in a physical battle, but they were fighting on principles. Fundamental principles on what each one of them live on. The Gemara in Chulin on the Tzadi Aleph tells us, Behayavik, this language is from the root avak, dust. And the avak went up to the Kisei HaKavod from this fight. There was dust, physical dust. The Gemara in Chulin also tells us something unique about Yaakov, that Yaakov is the one above, found his name on the Kisei HaKavod. What's going on over here? You want to know what's going on over here? Yaakov and Saro Shel Esav were fighting about how to survive in this world and how their Mahalach HaChayim. Yaakov was defending Yiddishkeit and saying that all of this world, the Yevonim, the Nes of Chanukah, Hichshichu Einayim Shel Yisrael, they take dust and they blur up the whole world. Anything that looks enticing, anything that looks desirable, that we really want to have, we want to have that filet mignon. You know what that is? It's all dust. It's all avak. It's all covering and blurring the pictures and the real tochen of Dvar. If we really understood
what we had to gain, what the Ribbono Shel Olam had to offer us, what was really there, and what we're going to understand, Lasid Lavo, then we would understand that this is just a layer. This is just avak in this physical world, in this quarrel, coming out of this quarrel, and blurring up our lives and presenting things desirable and causing us to fall. But then Yaakov says, no. Ma Shimcha? What is your name? What is your tochen? What's behind the dust? What do you represent? How do you represent yourself? When you go up there, what do you show off? You don't have a real name. You don't have a real representation. You don't have a shame to yourself, because all it is dust. Everything that's coming out of our fight is just dust. And that's why he ultimately went. And that's why Yaakov's response was, Behei Avik, Imo, Yaakov's response was not making a monument of a tank. Was, I am calling this place Peniel. Because you know what I won? You know how I was victorious? Because I was able to see the Ribbono Shel Olam, Panim El Panim. I was able to survive in this world, to look through the Pnimius Hadvarim, past the dust. And that is why I was victorious. Because I could see the depth and the tachlis in life. And where I'm going to, and why I'm going to, and what really matters, and what has sustainable names and has carried the name La'olam Ha'asid. That is what I'm going to commemorate this place. And that is what the Gid Hanasha is. Gid Hanasha is telling us and demonstrating for us that these prohibitions, Macholos Asuris, even though they look great, and a filet mignon to a Boy Scout dinner could be the most desirable thing, we could cancel the whole thing. It's Eitz Ba'alma. It's a piece of wood. It might taste good, and you might think that it's desirable, and the dust might make it look presentable, but at the end of the day, the item is a bunch of wood. It's dust. And that is what every Jew needs to understand. In their struggles in life, in this world, things look difficult. Things look like they're impossible to get through. There are desires, there's interest, there's... It's all dust. And it looks difficult. It looks negative. But at the end of the day, you will see the positive that comes out of all your struggle and all of your climbing to get to the Piniel, the Panim al Panim, beyond the dust, as Yaakov Avinu is sitting on the Kisei HaKavod above the Avok. And that's the message. And with this I close. The Zohar writes that Al Kein Lo Yochlu Es Gid Hanasha. There is a mitzvah in every Torah to represent every day of the year. 365 against the 365. However, when it comes to... Not however. And what is Gid Hanasha? Says the Zohar, Es Gid Hanasha is Rashi Tevos Tisha Av. And that's the same message. You know, the Mashiach is born on the day of Tisha B'Av. So the day which looks like the day of the most struggle, the day of the strongest difficulty, ultimately, we will see that that is the day that the Geula will come from, when the Pnimius HaDvarim will come out from outside the layer of dust. Shkai.